This is Dean Reuter, Director of the Federalist Society's Practice Groups. We continue our SCOTUSCast series with a discussion of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision upholding the federal partial birth abortion ban. In the following podcast, you will hear first from Chapman Law School Professor John Eastman, and then from Duke University Law School Professor Erwin Chemerinsky.
This is Professor John Eastman, the Henry Salvatore Professor of Law and Community Service at Chapman University School of Law and the Director of the Claremont Institute's Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence, addressing today the Supreme Court's decision in Gonzales versus Carhart. The Supreme Court today issued its ruling in a much-awaited partial birth abortion case, Gonzales versus Carhart. As the news accounts have already led on, the Supreme Court upheld Congress's decision to restrict the partial birth abortions, and in particular decided to restrict a particularly gruesome kind of abortion where an unborn child, a fetus, halfway delivered through the birth canal, has its skull crushed and the brains literally sucked out of the skull of the baby before the baby is continued. Justice Kennedy joined with the conservative justices, Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito, joining the bench since the last partial birth abortion case, and Justices Scalia and Thomas. And he said in his majority opinion for the court that he was faithfully applying the Supreme Court's last major abortion case, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. He rejected challenges to the concurrent congressional statute that said that the statute was void for vagueness, and he very clearly delineated how the statute easily met the standards. He then went on to say that this was not an undue burden on the right of a woman to have an abortion because it limited only a particular kind of abortion and remained open for a doctor and a woman to prescribe particular other kinds of abortion. Finally, he said that it was okay for Congress to ban this particular kind of abortion because it was, in fact, so close to the killing of an actual newborn baby. Now, here's the most interesting aspect of the case. Justice Kennedy says here that the state's interest in respecting life is advanced by the dialogue that better informs the political and legal systems, the medical profession, expectant mothers, and society as a whole of the consequences that follow from a decision to elect a late-term abortion. And, of course, the biggest challenge and criticism of Roe over the last 35 years, Roe versus Wade, has been that it took the abortion decision, the abortion controversy, out of the political process, as if the courts could somehow magically decide this intensely political issue for the rest of the country. I think Justice Kennedy's language here is very significant in his new appreciation of the importance of a political dialogue about this most basic of political controversies in our land. He then went on to say that that the fact that the congressional statute did not include an exception for the health of the mother was not a constitutional infirmity of the statute because there is conflicting evidence on whether this particular kind of abortion is ever necessary for the health of the mother. Now, normally, in prior years, the fact that there was conflicting evidence would have meant that the court would decide the matter. But here, Justice Kennedy said, because there's conflicting evidence, that means it is a subject for the legislative process to decide. And so, again, I think the most significant development in this case is Justice Kennedy's rethinking of this role of the legislature and the political process in determining these questions. Now, one should be real careful here about what was not accomplished. Roe versus Wade is, of course, not overturned. And Justice Kennedy himself did not switch votes in this instance. He was in dissent 7 years ago when a similar partial birth abortion statute out of Nebraska was struck down by the court 5-4. So what this opinion today represents is a switch from Justice O'Connor, who was in the majority in that case, to Justice Alito, who joined with Justice Kennedy in the majority here. The second thing that's important to remember about this case is what a small step it really is. Important, but small. Justice Kennedy's holding actually says that this statute is constitutional against a facial challenge. Now, that's a bit of lawyer speak, legal speak, but what that means is the statute had to be invalid in all or almost all instances for the facial challenge to succeed. That is, it's facially unconstitutional. And what Justice Kennedy says is it doesn't meet that test. There are lots of ways in which this case, this statute, might be applied constitutionally. Now, what that it does is invites further challenges to this statute once facts are developed in particular context, and they will then bring back new challenges to this statute as applied in those particular contexts. So I don't think Justice Kennedy is punting entirely and changing his vote entirely on the abortion controversy, at least not yet. At least we don't know that yet from this decision. As applied challenges will still be welcome. So again, I think the most significant part of the case is his willingness now to leave more of the deliberative process to the legislature, to engage in a dialogue about the significant state interests on both sides of the abortion question, both the mother's right found by the Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade, I put right in quotation marks there, and importantly, the child's right, the right of the unborn infant to life, and the state's interest in respecting and protecting that right. All along, the court has mouthed respect for that interest and the state's interest in protecting liberty. But the abortion cases up until now have really not given that interest any voice. So I applaud Justice Kennedy and certainly the majority of the court for reengaging the legislative process, the political debate. And it's now time, I hope, that we have the dialogue about the importance of that interest that Roe versus Wade cut off and prevented us from having 36 years ago.
And now, Professor Erwin Chemerinsky.
The Supreme Court's decision upholding the federal law prohibiting partial birth abortion is a dramatic change in the law concerning abortion rights. Although Justice Kennedy's majority opinion pretends that the court was following precedent, it was doing nothing of the sort. The court adopted a radically different approach for scrutinizing laws regulating abortion and clearly signaled that there are five justices ready and willing to uphold far more government regulation of abortions. Ever since Roe v. Wade was decided in 1973, the Supreme Court has declared unconstitutional laws that significantly burden a woman's right to obtain an abortion. For the last 15 years, the court has held that a law regulating abortion be struck down if it imposed an undue burden on some women in their ability to exercise their constitutional right to abortion. For example, in 1992, in Planned Parenthood v. Casey, the court invalidated provision in a Pennsylvania law that required married women to notify their husbands before obtaining an abortion. The justices noted that some women are in an abusive relationship and the requirement for spousal notification would be an undue burden. Similarly, in 2000, in Stenberg v. Carhart, the court struck down a Nebraska law regulating so-called partial birth abortion. The law prohibited removal of a living fetus or substantial part of a living fetus with the intent of ending the fetus's life. The court invalidated the statute as an undue burden on the right to abortion because it had no exception allowing the procedure or warranted by the health of the woman, and also because the law was written in a way to prohibit many types of abortion procedures. In its decision on Wednesday, the court upheld a federal law prohibiting partial birth abortion, which was very similar to that struck down in Stenberg v. Carhart. Like the Nebraska statute, the federal law had no health exception and also was broadly written. There's no way to reconcile Wednesday's ruling with the decision from 7 years ago. Most troubling is the court's shift in approach. No longer will a law be struck down because it imposed an undue burden on some women in their ability to gain an abortion. Instead, the court said that a woman wanting to challenge the law must argue that it is unconstitutional as applied to her. From a practical perspective, this is absurd. Imagine a woman seeking an abortion in her 22nd or 23rd week of pregnancy before the fetus is viable. Her doctor believes that a partial birth abortion procedure would be by far safer for her. Medical evidence is strong that this procedure is the safest one at this stage of pregnancy, particularly in women with some bleeding disorders and infectious diseases. To use this procedure, the woman and her doctor would have to file a lawsuit arguing that the law is unconstitutional as applied. The urgency and timing would make a judicial determination impossible. By the time a court could rule, the time for abortion would have passed. Under the court's approach in Wednesday's decision, no longer can laws requiring spousal notification or parental notification be struck down as they were in prior cases. Instead, the courts only could hear a claim that the law is unconstitutional as applied to a particular woman. The result is that the government will have far more latitude to regulate abortion and limit the ability of women to exercise their constitutional right to reproductive choice. Neither precedent nor principle accounts for the court's departure from precedent and significant shift in the law. Rather, the ruling is entirely a result of the shift in the composition of the court. In Stenberg v. Carhart in 2000, the five justices in the majority were John Paul Stevens, Sandra O'Connor, David Souter, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Stephen Breyer. O'Connor is gone, is replaced by Samuel Alito. He and Chief Justice Roberts were both the majority to effectively overrule Stenberg v. Carhart. There's so much discussion at the confirmation hearings of Roberts and Alito precedent, super precedent. We know now that there's just a lot of talk to secure confirmations. As their opponents predicted, the new justice solid votes to limit abortion rights, and have no hesitation of overruling precedent to do so. The real losers from Wednesday's decision are women who will be subjected to less safe medical procedures. The central holding of Roe v. Wade is the choice of a medical procedure through a woman and a doctor. The court abandoned that on Wednesday, and women across the country will suffer from it.